Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back to rewind this episode of Survivor 46. And we are so excited to talk about it. John, what were your thoughts on the episode?
Well, season 46 at this point just keeps delivering. Yes, I mean, the pre-merge might have been a little lackluster, seeing another tribe get decimated and everything. But everything since this game has merged has been so fun. This episode was all sorts of chaos. So many different people trying to make their move, figure out what they were doing. And it's just been so much fun. I'm very excited to talk about what happened in 46 and how it relates to some moments maybe some people are thinking about.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get into our outwit. And that is big move-itis. We get people talking in this episode how got to make a big move, need to add something to my resume, blah, 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 all that.
Yeah, this is something that I think we've kind of been ignoring so far with the, well, as we've been talking about 46, but it's becoming more and more apparent. People are talking big moves. And of course, we had that talk in the split tribal when Tevin's talking about making the big move, take out Soda. And of course, Venus has been talking about it the entire time. Last week, we have that idea of Liz pushing the big move of taking out Tevin. And then this week, we see Liz complaining that her big move was overshadowed by whatever Q was doing last week. And This week, again, we have more people preaching, I need a big move. I need a big move on my resume. And this time, of all the people saying it, it's Kenzie coming out of nowhere and saying, hey, let's vote out my number one ally.
Right, exactly. So for my outwit big move person, I'm going Will Wall. And I just feel like in Millennials versus Gen X, it got to like mid-merge and he was like, I need to do something. I need to just like blow something up and make a big and do have a big move just to have a big move so I can have something on my resume. And I feel like that is really where we heard a lot of like resume for the finale.
Yeah. And I think Millennials versus Gen X is kind of this prime opportunity where we see a lot of people talk about big moves more in that like post second chances, like in the 30s area, I think is where we really get a lot of discussion of big moves and resume building. So when we see Will, who's kind of in a decent position with the Millennials throughout.
Yeah, not on the top, not on the bottom.
Yeah, he's not being targeted. Yes, he's young. And I think that's kind of part of the driving factor for why he ends up feeling the necessity to make a big move. He does need something a little bit more than just getting to the end, because he also has to convince, you know, all of these people in this game to award an 18-year-old money.
Right. And not just any money, $1 million.
Exactly, right? Like, there's a lot of pressure to it. The weirdest thing about when Will Wall decides to make this decision is it's right after the Rocks, right? After surviving Rocks, mm-hmm. everything seems to go their way with Jessica going home. And then all of a sudden, Will decides, I'm going to turn on Zeke.
Yeah, I mean, that Zeke is probably like his big move. A lot of people were liking Zeke or had Zeke in their plans. So trying to take out Zeke would be a move on his resume. But, you know, big moves always come with a price, and you have to know how to navigate them.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what the biggest, like, the weird outlier of what we just saw on 46 was to me. I understand the need to, I understand the desire to have these big moves, build a resume. It's flashy. It helps you, especially in a season where everyone is seemingly trying to pick up big moves. You need one of your own to distinguish yourself from everyone else. And it was just so weird seeing Kenzie be the one to be like, I want to get rid of Tiffany. Because it feels like a too early type of situation for that type of thing to be going on. Yes, I understand you're concerned about Tiffany. You're concerned she's going to, you know, have this idol that she can use later on. It's going to be harder to get her out. She is someone who seemingly should be able to win individual immunities. But at the same time, she's also your closest ally. And I
mean, also, Will was targeting a fellow millennial when there are still Gen Xers in the game that were big and he could target as well. So that's similar to Kenzie, where she's going for Tiff, one of her like A1 since day one, like people. And it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I think, what happens we've seen it a lot as we've progressed through Survivor's history, that people feel the desire to make a big move and kind of pronounce themselves a little bit more in the game, because this is, and I think millennials versus Gen X again is a great opportunity for that. When we have someone like Will, who was born after Survivor started airing, mm-hmm. right? And, or like grew up with Survivor from like his like earliest of ages and everything. And he, because of that, this is kind of that era of Survivor where the super fans started taking over, right? And we talk about it a lot in the new era because we have a lot of those super fans. But when mm-hmm. we look at, when we're looking at something like Windows versus JX, and we have that younger crowd in that cast, these are people who have grown up with Survivor and they see the need for a big move, because those are the flashy things that we see a lot in edits. Mm-hmm. And historically up to this point, those like under the radar games are super under edited and not as easy to pick up on. So it's no surprise that a player as young as Will would come into this situation and think, I have to have a big move, because that's what wins Survivor.
Right, exactly. So Will then targets Zeke.
Who then, I mean, moving on to my outwit moment here, Zeke does the exact same thing the very next season, where Zeke gets this desire to make a big move. And again, it's one of those situations where it doesn't quite make sense. Mm-hmm. But before we talk about that, make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel. We greatly appreciate it. Helps get everyone out there so they can all hear us talk so much about Zeke today. But so in Game Changers, Zeke does this very strange, makes this very strange decision to turn on Ceri and Andrea at the merge. It's not directly at the merge, because obviously the merge happens, everyone votes out Haley. But after that, Zeke starts feeling that his game will be completely lost if he just lets Andrea and Sari dictate every vote, because it's very clear. And I mean, this merge episode of Game Changers really once again shows how phenomenal of a game player Sari is and how she, you know, rallies the Umbreon towards her and everything. But this was the group that was on the bottom going into this merge too, because this is a group of like Zeke, Andrea, Sarah, Sari, and then they like kind of have Ozzy at this point. And Ozzy like finally feels like he's okay with Sari after, you know, getting over the trauma of Sari betraying him in Micronesia. And Zeke just feels like he's getting lost in all of that and that he's not doing anything. So after Haley goes, who they vote out because they think he has an idol, or she has an idol, then we get this like moment of Zeke just being like, I have to turn on Sari and Andrea. Mm-hmm. Like, let's vote out Andrea. And from a positioning in the game standpoint, it makes almost zero sense.
Yeah, because Andrea was like ride or dying with Zeke, and like they were tight in the game, especially after the tribal council that shall not be named.
Yeah, which directly preceded everything here happening, right? Because that was the last tribal council that happened right before the merge. And there were some talks of Zeke, you know, having a great story at the end because of that and everything. And it's interesting because no one's really looking at Zeke at this point as someone who needs to go out here. And instead, at this point, as we like progress through this episode, and the weirdest thing about this big move-itis is it doesn't pay off, and Zeke isn't punished for it immediately either. So Zeke doesn't manage to rally the numbers to get Andrea out of the game, but instead tries to do that. But the other side's like, hey, you know what? This is a great opportunity for us to take out Ozzy.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone Zeke was working with previously votes for Zeke at that tribal council.
Yeah, it makes no sense. It'll be interesting to hear if it gets back to Tiffany that Kenzie threw her name out, or that she was a plan for a while until it got flipped back to the Q and Hunter split.
Yeah, and that's the most interesting thing about what's going on with 46 is we see Kenzie acknowledging when she's talking to Charlie and Maria, if this gets out, I am cooked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no way. And in relinquishing that information, yes, I understand what Kenzie's doing. She's trying to show trust in Charlie and Maria. But by doing so, she's also relinquishing all her power in the situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's tough. And the interesting thing about Zeke's move that I noticed, because I wanted to be reminded of this tribal council and like what happened with Zeke and why he decided to make this flip. And there's something really interesting that happens. This is the double merge episode. So it's a double boot merge episode from Game Changers. Right after Haley is voted out, Jeff says something really interesting at the end of tribal council. And he says, I'm trying to remember the exact wording, but it's something along the lines of, okay, Haley's on the jury now, so every move you make now is to build your resume. He actually says the word resume, and he mentions moves. So I'm wondering if Jeff saying this at tribal council is enough to kind of freak Zeke out to deciding that he has to try to make this move now when there are still 12 people left in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think what it comes down to is Kenzie, Zeke, and Will all just pick their big moves against the wrong person. Mm-hmm. Like, they could still have a big move, but they just have to pick their target a little bit better. So Kenzie should have probably gone to Tiffany about Maria and not the other way around.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing about it is, I'm commending Charlie and Maria here because somehow neither of their names came up in all of this mess that was this episode of 46. Mm-hmm. And they even had the wherewithal to be like, you know what, I want this to be our move, but it's actually better for us if we don't. And we saw Kedzie say the exact same thing last episode. when approached with the Tavern boot of like, hey, now the Yanus don't have to drive this. That's good for us. Lets us lay back a little bit.
Yeah.
And then Maria says it again, where it's like, but the difference between the way Maria says it and what we see from Kenzie so far, and this could completely go out the window this week if Maria says something contradictory to it. Maria says, we have to be okay with this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're still getting what we want, but we don't need the credit because we can get the credit later at the end of the game when it actually matters.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have anything else for Outwit, John?
Big move itis is something we've seen a lot in recent seasons, and like mm-hmm. these are just kind of two prime examples of it. It's going to be interesting because it's going to be interesting to see the repercussions of 46 on people who play the game. And I guess 48 will be the first season that sees them all, like all the episodes air before filming. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see if we go back to people trying to make more subtle moves in like 48, 49, and 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, our outplay moment of 46 that we are going to be taken back is pairs or groups or what have you that compete together and then split up during phases of the challenge. So in 46 this week, we saw groups of three work together throughout the challenge, and then we see those three people compete in a final endurance leg of the immunity challenge to get that final win. And I like this mechanic, and I feel like they should do this more often because it is what they were saying in the episode. It all depends on who you are with. And, you know, do you take the strong people in your group to get through to the last phase, or do you take maybe some weaker people that you know you can beat at the end, but maybe you might not make it there?
Yeah, and especially the way that they were making groups in 46, it gets really interesting because, first off, when we see the social pariahs kind of be their own group at the end because nobody wanted to work with Q, Liz, or Venus. But the other thing we see is that conversation between Q and Charlie about, hey, Charlie, like, you can literally throw this challenge to make sure that Hunter doesn't win. And that's all, like, these layers of strategy and the intricacies of a challenge like this, where people have to rely on other people to get to the point where they can compete for themselves.
Right, exactly.
Before we get into our examples, McKenna, do you remember the challenge from last season?
No. No, I do not.
Because there was something from last season that didn't happen this season. This is the challenge last season where the first group out had to go on the journey to see if they earned their vote back.
Oh, because it didn't happen that way in like 44 or...
It only happened in 45, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really interesting because I was just like... I'm very cognizant of the time while I'm watching the episode as it airs and noticing how much time was left. I was like, oh, right, like we're going to the challenge like 10 minutes into this 90-minute episode. That's kind of weird. I didn't expect like the craziness that was going to happen after this challenge to happen. And I'm really glad that is what happened instead. So I very much expected us to revisit exactly what they did last season, because again, when these seasons are filmed in pairs, like 45 and 46 were, usually those things happen again. So it's really interesting that production decided not to do that twist this time around.
I'm very glad that they did not do that twist.
Me too. That would have made this vote even more chaotic, because who knows who would have acted. Because then potentially what that group was, Tiffany, Ben, and Kenzie could have all lost their votes in some number of ways. That would have made this even more, who knows how it would have gone out. Catherine Griffiths here asked a question. Do you think that Kenzie tried to throw the challenge to get out of Tiff?
I don't know. Like, I feel, in my opinion, or what I would do is like do my best in the challenge. And if, you know, a plan that I had been thinking about with Tiffany didn't pan, like could pan out after we had lost, okay, great. But I would still want like the security of immunity, because me as Kenzie could probably do really well in the end portion of it and could probably still beat Tiffany. So it doesn't matter if Tiff gets to the end challenge as long as she's beaten there.
Yeah, I think Kenzie kind of probably had the same approach as Charlie of I'm not about throwing challenges.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we see like throws every once in a while, but I think for the most part, especially when individual immunity is up for grabs and it means getting rid of your own individual immunity, I'm pretty sure most people are just going to compete full out for it. Mm-hmm. Which is also what makes it interesting when we look at some of these challenges in the past that do this, because a lot of them are for reward instead of immunity.
Yeah, exactly. So, John, why don't you go with your example?
So, and mine actually is for reward and immunity. Mm-hmm. This is the final 8 reward immunity challenge in All Stars. So it's right after the Lex vote. Everyone's just like high tension. And there's this really convoluted obstacle course for the first portion. So the remaining castaways are split into 2 groups of 4. And they have to do all these different obstacles, including like 3 of them have to dig for a flag in a cage while the and then as soon as they find the flag, the 4th person can go down the flying vox and find the key to let them out of the cage. It's super convoluted,
right?
And then after that, the winning group of 4 have to compete in a slide puzzle. There's that asymmetrical slide puzzle where they have to release the knife and cut the rope that Rob ends up winning here. The interesting thing is the reward challenge for this is also the letters from home, which obviously we don't get. I mean, we do get it in the new era because they don't fly out people, but it was a really touching moment because this is another one of those moments where it kind of harkens back to Borneo, where they have the snippets of everyone's video, because the big reward for winning. So after the winning 4 would get their letters from home and rain ponchos.
Yes.
Which everyone forgets about in this challenge. And then the person who wins will get immunity and also see their full video from home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually kind of emotional because Jenna Lewis is there. And if anyone remembers Borneo, Jenna didn't get her.
They all remember Borneo, don't worry.
Jenna didn't get her video in that, so there's like an emotional moment of like Jenna finally getting her video 7 seasons later.
Yeah, but she doesn't get her video.
No one gets their video because Rob actually gives up his video so that everyone can get their letters from home instead. It's a negotiation straight out of the new era at that point, and Jeff's just a little more lenient, but I guess it's an All-Star season, and we know he's more lenient with those.
Yeah, I really like this challenge idea because it would have also been really interesting if they had gone out on reward too as the 4, but then they also had just competed and Rob had won immunity. Like, it would have brought a really interesting dynamic to that reward because there could have been like tensions and things like that, or you know, they're partnered with, you know, their alliance and like, all right, great, as long as like an alliance member won, I'm good. But I just really like that dynamic of how do I choose my pairing and then move forward from that within the game, because not necessarily knowing that, oh, we're going to be splitting up.
And in this challenge, I mean, they do know that they're going to be splitting up. Jeff does elaborate that in the instructions, but it's also a schoolyard pick, which I think is very different than what we saw in 46, where they make their own groups. Because now at this point, because the interesting thing with the schoolyard pick is you have to pick a team. Now you get an opportunity where you're picking back and forth and you're picking a team that puts yourself further in, like through that first portion, but you're also competing against that team. And I think it's, And it's knowing the challenge when you're doing that. And I think that's really the big difference between this and 46, where 46 are just told, yeah, you have to do this. And in this one, it's like, cool, now I'm evaluating absolutely everything. And the team captains, I think, were Alicia and I want to say it was Tom was the other captain.
That's correct.
And so because of that, it just like changes the way you approach this challenge completely.
Yeah, exactly. My challenge is a little wacky. I am going to Thailand. And this challenge is at the final what, John? Do you remember?
It's an odd number. It's final seven. It's episode 10. So it's final seven.
Final seven. So the final seven of Thailand. First, this is the whole challenge, like start to finish. You got to grab a buddy, and then use planks to navigate a like obstacle course kind of thing. And the odd one out is automatically eliminated. So you already have to have that social capital with someone to be able to move on to the next phase. Then from that, you're back into individuals, and you have to go, I believe it's a net crawl. And then the first three to finish that move on to scaling a wall. And so you need people to be able to lift you up. And then you have to believe in the person you lifted up that they'll lift you up. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of, you know, intermingling personnel. Like, how do you know where you stand? And it's very clear when Brian gets chosen by Clay that those two are tight, and Brian has a lot of social capital within the game.
Yeah, and after the wall, they have to compete against each other again, racing across balance beams. So yeah. Not only Clay had the advantage where both at that point in the challenge, Ted and Brian both help him up first, and mm-hmm. he gets to essentially choose who he's going to compete in this last bit with. And he chooses Brian, who is also who he partnered with at the beginning of this challenge.
Yep.
So it seems like in that case, the alliance and camaraderie between Clay and Brian was what was driving decisions in this challenge. Whereas saw other people kind of scrambling, and it's really interesting with the pairs because everyone essentially just grabs the person beside them, which leaves, but Jake's in the middle of everything, and he's the one who's left out in the end.
Yeah, they all just go like this, and then Jake is just, okay, I'll go on that bench over there.
Yeah. I think the really interesting thing with this, because it's just for reward, obviously people want reward. It involves food and, like, luxury and everything like that, but it doesn't feel like it has the same stakes as these ones that are for immunity.
Right. Yeah, I agree. But I also feel like when you're in a competition and in a challenge, like, my brain would just be like, go, 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 go. I want to win. And then, like, I didn't have to win that one. Like, yeah. It was just reward. Let me take a step back. Let maybe someone else win or take the heat, you know, from picking people. Like, I don't need to. So it would be one of those challenges where I'm like in the moment and like, all right, gotta go. Like, help me up. Mm-hmm. And not need to go that far.
So McKenna, I have a question. If you're playing Survivor and you're confronted with one of these type of challenges where you have to work with people and mm-hmm. then compete against them in the end, what's your strategy you have going into picking your groups?
I want a beefy person, mm-hmm. I think would be ideal for me because I can probably beat them in an endurance balance situation. So if I have just like the biggest guy or girl that can help mm-hmm. lift me over something or, you know, help lift the boards, something like that, that can get me forward, I can probably beat them on the tail end.
Okay. I think a few weeks ago we talked about Koh Rong, and there's the reward challenge where they win the ice cream, where they have to transfer those people across with using mm-hmm. the two poles.
Yeah.
And the way that kind of split up from the schoolyard pick is we had like the talls and smalls on one side and like the average people in the mm-hmm. other. I think when you're doing this type of thing, it's really beneficial to have the averages.
Yeah.
I think for the most part,
I just don't want a harder end game though for myself.
Right. But if you're when you're looking at like competing with
endgame, like, as an ends challenge, not
yeah,
as
of course. But like when you're looking at competing against like strong challenge performers who are the people who will help you get to the end versus like, okay, maybe like you, maybe you're the average person in the group and you have like the challenge beast of the season and the worst challenge person on the season. Is that better than competing with two other people who are like equally have a chance?
I guess it's just a like a flip of a coin chance. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you take the risk on? Do you take the risk on making it there or not finishing it out in the end? Because if it's like just get across the balance beam, I feel like I might have a stronger chance to win right. that. But if it's endurance and I'm against like, you know, Charlie and Venus. I yeah. don't know.
Yeah, that's fair. And again, that is one of the benefits that 4A6 didn't have. They didn't know what the challenge was going to be going into this. And they really just let their social environment dictate mm-hmm. how these groups broke out instead of actually yeah. thinking about the fact that this is a challenge for immunity.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. So let's get into our outlast moment.
And McKenna, I'm pretty sure this week it's an out shred moment.
Oh, my bad. Let's get into our out shred moment of the week. And that is bringing in our thumbnail of Marty, Q, and Reynolds. I'm sure everyone was excited to hear why those guys are on the cover of this episode. And that is split votes due to an idol. And John and I were with a revote. So like mm-hmm. John and I were looking, and obviously they do split votes all the time. But there's not a lot of times where people go to the revote. Mm-hmm. It's always, you know, 5-4 and then, you know, let the other people do what they need to do or whatever it is. It's always like a majority, a minority, and then the other people vote wherever. And it's not often that it's like directly split even.
Yeah, and a lot of it is dependent on how many people are on the opposing side as well, right? Mm-hmm. You kind of need to split your numbers so that whatever, if you are doing a larger group with a smaller group, the smaller group has to equal the amount of people on the other side. Mm-hmm. Just so that you can tie the vote at the very least to force a revote if an idol is played on the person who does have more votes. So like you said, this doesn't happen all that often. In mm-hmm. fact, it's quite rare that this happens. And because of that, we don't get many examples of it. And I'm even more baffled by how this happens in 4D6 and how this exact split happens, because I'm not sure what numbers they're trying to counteract the split.
Yeah. I was also confused on this. On the split, I guess they were just banking on Hunter to play his idol once they mm-hmm. got word of it, and then Q would just go home, and then Hunter could have like the security of Kenzie being like, I didn't vote for you, I voted for Q. And so like any his like surrounding people, Liz being like, I voted for Q, you know, and have that confidence to like maybe keep the idol another round.
Yeah, that's very possible. And it's very, I think
the strategic, hopefully that's a strategic play of like, who was Hunter talking to, make them vote Q.
Yeah, that's very possible. I also think from what we saw in the episode, Liz was always voting Q, had no intention of changing right. her vote from Q. So mm-hmm. you can, and with these split votes, you can really utilize what the known knowledge you have to your mm-hmm. advantage. And yeah. that's why when we get into other situations with the examples we're going to talk about, split votes to force an idol are interesting, especially when we get to a point where the opposing group that might have the idol could only need to bring one person out to counteract that split.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's just start. I'm going to start with mine, because mine's a weird one. It's so weird. But we are going to go back to Survivor Nicaragua. And this is a post-swap, pre-merge tribal council on LaFleur, where it's the second iteration of LaFleur. They're not quite that flashy anymore. But in this tribe split, the way it worked out, you have three of the older, like the original Espadas, in Marty, Jane, and Jill. But Jane's kind of ingratiated herself with the original LaFleurs and the younger people. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, whatever, she's one of us now.
Yep.
So prior to the challenge happening in this episode, we see Brenda say, I think the plan is just split on Marty and on Jill.
Yep.
And, you know, force Marty to use his idol, we'll get out of Jill. Not that big of a deal. Then Jill wins immunity.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, now what are we going to do? Logically, you would think, oh, this means we just split between Marty and Jane. Except everyone in Nicaragua hated Kelly Bruno's guts.
Yep. For no reason.
For no reason. And there is a very cringy confessional from Brenda about, yeah, Kelly has one leg. We can't let that go to the end. like, super cringy. So they decide. We
don't get to Chad either. So.
Yeah. So they decide the thing that they need to do is split the votes between Kelly and Marty. Have Marty play his idol. Kelly goes home. But the issue with this, now they also have to tell Kelly who the split's on and have Kelly be on the split that votes for Marty.
Because it sounds like a convoluted plan that they did not have the mental bandwidth for.
Yeah, well, to make things weirder, they do in fact do the split vote. There's three votes on Marty, three votes on Kelly. Then they re-vote and they vote out Kelly Bruno and let Marty keep his idol.
So when you split a vote to avoid an idol play or like to counteract an idol play and they don't play the idol, you do what 46 does and vote out the person with the idol. You don't do what Nicaragua does and let the person with the idol stay on. But to Marty's credit, he's a grandmaster in chess, so he was able to play this round perfectly.
This is actually the episode where he brings up that he beat a grandmaster as a child and tells us that he actually named a tennis star. And the exact line Marty uses in this episode is, I can say anything from the 70s and 80s, and these kids don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Facts.
Yeah. It's genius. And I mean, to be fair, Marty did really ingratiate himself with Fabio in this episode. And I think that's ultimately what helps him out here. And just this disdain for Kelly Bruno that all of these people had for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So my episode is the one that we're watching over on the Patreon. And that is Cara Moen, season 26, episode 11, Come Over to the Dark Side. And it's the Malcolm boot. So go over there. We deep dive that whole episode. But I'll talk a little bit here about the avoidance of an idol play. So this is at the final nine, and we have the three amigos and the six other people. They just voted out Philip, and Stealth R Us is now six members without their leader. Malcolm gets a clue at the auction to an idol. They had just played two idols, so they know, you know, more are in the works here. And Malcolm gets this clue at the auction, and he gets babysat the entire time, never actually finds it, but they don't know for sure that he doesn't have it. So the six of them go 3-3 on Malcolm and Reynolds, and then the three amigos go 3 on Andrea, thus leaving Eddie the only amigo to vote in the revote and not able to do anything.
The interesting thing about this is because Philip's gone, Stealth R Us was kind of like sticking together because Philip was still there, right? Like Philip was very much pushing the idea of Stealth R Us stick together, get rid of the three amigos. Yes, the remainders of Stealth R Us do feel concerns about the three amigos. They are the three brawny men on this season. They could easily go on immunity runs and challenge for a win easily. However, the real concern happens like right before Tribal Council in this episode, where they're like, man, I sure hope Eric and Sherry decide to stick with us, because if they don't, like, we just gave them all the power in doing the split vote.
Yeah, exactly.
But they didn't have a choice. There is no other choice other than loading up on one person or splitting evenly with the three amigos. It's
right.
It's a very difficult position, which 46 didn't have to have. But unlike like in 46, where they talk about idols being played and, you know, ultimately idols not being played, but people saying they're going to play their idols that they do in fact have. In Karamoan, Malcolm saying, hey, I do have the idol because, you know, I have a clue. So like I have it. And Malcolm forces their hand into making this split. And it is quite, I think the three amigos play this the best way they can. They just don't quite have enough social capital to pull over either of these two people who were considering working with them. Eric had just flipped on Philip in the last vote and voted with the three amigos.
And Cherry has that confessional of saying, maybe I want to work with the meatheads. Mm-hmm. But they can't grab them over, and they have an interesting strategy on how they tackle the idol, which we get more into when we discuss the episode. But yeah, I like this one specifically because it's also it's a 3-3-3 mm-hmm. where it's not just they're splitting with their, you know, who they want to target with the idol. It's also three with the other alliance as well, and it adds like an extra like little twist dynamic to this vote.
That's what was the least interesting part about this 46 vote this week, is it ended up being 4-4, and Q is clearly out on an island and has no idea what's going on.
He did 100% vote then, but
right. But, like, no one told him about the plan to vote for Hunter.
Yeah.
I mean, probably rightfully so, based on, you know, Q is a variable at this point, at the very right. best. So I totally understand why they don't let him in on this. But we don't get that. This one would have been uneventful if Hunter had played the idol. Whereas there'd still be a revote in Karamoan if an idol was played.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just it's fun that they had to navigate the split vote. But John, is there anything else you would like to say?
I'm just really excited for more 46, because honestly, there have been this post-merge has been so wild. And I think it's really nice that we talk about Karamoan, because I've really seen the comparables from Karamoan to 46 right now, and I know a lot of people are talking Gabon being similar, but Karamoan, infamously terrible pre-merge, very, very solid post-merge, and I'm getting the same feeling that 46 is trending in that direction. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens now with Q out on himself. Does that make him a bigger wild card, or does that mean he's just going to fade away? With all of these people wanting to make big moves all the time. Like, I'm just so curious, who's the next person to come up in this next episode being like, it's my turn for a big move, I'm going to do it. And who is the target of that big move? Is it still Tiffany, who still has an idol? Is it Kenzie now? Is it Maria? Is it Charlie? Who knows?
It's Venus.
Yes, the biggest of moves is getting out the Queen Venus.
But that is all for our rewind today. John, what's happening in the Specialist Universe?
Well, if you haven't already, make sure to go check out the recap from Wednesday night. Blake joined Phil this week to talk about this wild episode. Because of that, there's no digging deeper this week. Mm-hmm. McKenna and Phil recapped the last episode of The Amazing Race yesterday, so make sure to go check that out. Phil will be joined by Kelly from season 45 on Sunday for the power rankings. So that should be another fantastic power rankings. Season 45 continues to deliver in all of the times they come and visit us on the pod. Monday, Phil and I will be talking Sicario and The Nice Guys on the Cinema Specialist. Two really great movies. If you haven't checked them out, make sure you do and tune into that on Monday. Tuesday, I mean, we're starting to get towards the end of Deal or No Deal Island now, but Phil and Will are still here recapping it for you.
It's so good. Please, if you're not watching Deal or No Deal Island, binge it. It's such a good show.
And then we'll be back for the recap with Phil on Wednesday this week. There'll be another new episode of Digging Deeper next week, and McKenna and I will be right back here next Friday with another Rewind.
Yes, so just remember, Phil, it will be going live right up after the episode to debrief that entire episode that you just watched, but then us over here, we take that episode and relate it to a bunch of things in Survivor's past, and it's a lot of fun bringing Survivor history to the present episode. But
you know what? Speaking of Survivor history, I think we would be remiss not to mention the passing of the first ever Survivor boot, Sonia Christopher, today. Obviously, like our condolences to her family and everyone who knows her in the Survivor community. We couldn't have Survivor without a first boot. So, Sonia, sad to see you go.
And if I could play ukulele, I'd play it on the way out.
There you go. Yeah. But make sure you like and subscribe to the video once again. Become a patron. McKenna and I talked all about that episode of Karamoan this week, and there's so much more. Every Season Matters has moved on to Thailand. Very interesting things to listen to there. You got Blaise Casting's perspective. You get Phil's after show recapping the episode even further every week. More Amazing Race from McKenna.
Oh, no. What more could you ask for?
More movies from the Cinema Specialist. There's so much there on the Patreon. So take a look. The link is right here. It's both in the description and below our faces right now. So check that out. Thank you, everyone.
And goodbye.
Goodbye.